Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Last week I said maybe something will happen.
Too much. Go. You went in the wrong direction.
Apple event announced, happening Tuesday, presumably iPhones, some other stuff, Apple Watch, maybe iPads, I don't know, we'll see. But
could happen.
As we were about to record this morning, the epic Apple court ruling came out.
It is indeed epic.
We hold the position of being your Friday podcast, so we get to talk about it. So interesting all around. Obviously, you know, presumably will be appealed, and they may ask for a stay on the restraining order. But like, basically, Epic lost almost every aspect of the case.
Yep. Except for one.
Epic really wanted to define Apple as a monopolist, and that defined the market that Apple was monopolizing as transactions on the iPhone. And the judge basically said, no, the market is digital mobile gaming transactions, and you owe Apple 30% of all that money that you took when you turned in your own in-app purchase system. But what everybody's focusing on is the one thing that Epic won, which is that the judge ruled that Apple should not be able to enforce its anti-steering provisions and allow links to external payment mechanisms. So similar to that Korean law that was passed, this is basically a judge saying prohibiting people from providing links to alternatives is not okay.
Right.
And how, what that means is, I think it's going to be determined by future court filings and all of that, ultimately. Yep.
So this isn't done.
No.
I mean, the legal process in this country is very slow.
And there's some real questions about, like, I've already seen the hot takes have been followed by hotter takes, as always happens. But I've seen some people say this is going to be a disaster because it means, you know, basically because Apple fought all this, now there's this ruling that says don't do this. And, you know, the fear is that you're going to end up in a situation where every game is going to go to a credit card link, and those things are outside of Apple's scrutiny. And so you're going to have, you know, the shady, you know, exorbitant recurring subscriptions that rip people off, although those happen in the App Store too. And, you know, parental controls will be bypassed and all of that, which is why I keep thinking, you know, that the right approach here is for Apple to say, to work with the court, which they have to do now, because they let this go to the point where they now have to work with a judge or judges to figure this out, to come up with a system that perhaps allows them to protect users by doing things like having those links, requiring those links to go through an API that checks against parental controls and stuff like that, right? Because that's going to be the next step of this, is how does Apple implement this? If it ultimately does have to, can it do it in a way, you know, what are its constraints? Because a judge essentially is going to have to say, okay, you putting it through an API to check parental controls is okay. Because otherwise the judge could basically say, no, I said no controls, including parental controls. Those are not allowed. And then Apple would have to comply if it ultimately lost, you know, any appeals that it has up its sleeve. Yeah.
There's a lot going on here. And I think it's important to know, also keep in mind, this is not a thing where tomorrow you'll be able to buy stuff, right? This is I believe the injunction takes place in 90 days. So, you know, there's several months before it gets away. And during that point, they will be appealing. They will be attempting to probably get a stay, you know, or something that says like, okay, we've got a little more time to figure this out while we're appealing stuff, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this is merely a step along that path. I think you're right about the way that has to be handled. And moreover, I think the biggest thing that needs to happen here is an attitude change on Apple's part, honestly, because as we've discussed before, like you said, they got to the point of this is how this is going to be dictated now. And you can either push back and dig your heels in and fight that all the way and maybe lose, and lose worse than if you sort of said, all right, we've got a new reality happening here. We got to find a way to adapt and to evolve so that we can continue delivering the most important parts of the service. And that's the key part to me, is Apple needs to decide that the most important part of this is protecting its users, not collecting 30% of all the money. And that's a hard thing for any corporation to decide, but I think it's sort of the ultimate driving force that has to be landed on here. And I think the best sort of template to use for this is saying, like, look, we know we'll be allowing third parties to use this this system, you know, or like their own payment systems. So what we need to do is make it more attractive to them to use our system. And that's the, it's like the iTunes store when it started, right? Like, we know piracy exists. We know people are downloading MP3s, but it's a terrible experience. So we can sort of appeal to you and say, hey, we'll provide a very smooth experience and you'll feel better about it because you're supporting artists rather than stealing. And it's just, it's like as easy as walking into a store and buying a CD, if not easier. So I think Apple has to come out of this saying, like, all right, how do we compete on the merits, as it were, and make our system something that developers will want to use and not be forced to use? And that, as we've discussed for a long time, I think gets at the root of why this system always felt bad, you know, or uncomfortable or unsavory to developers and to those of us who watch the Apple industry. And so I find that I can't, you know, I haven't read through the entire ruling, as pretty much nobody has, because it's like 200 pages and it just came out. But I did, I skipped to the end.
Sure.
And I don't know. I mean, I think this is probably a best case scenario. It's just there's going to be a rocky transition period here, and it's going to depend on Apple and developers all saying, like, all right, let's take a reset and sort of reapproach this. But I think there's a potential for this ending up with a better system for users, and that, and that's what should matter.
I also think that the judge here is saying Apple can require in-app purchase, Apple's in-app purchase system, but it also needs to allow this sort of steering outside of the system, which is not the same as saying, you know, Apple, that apps, my understanding is that apps can just dump Apple system and require their own. It sounds like the judge is not saying that, right? Like, so Apple, so in the end, what's going to happen, and who knows what the mechanism is, but probably what's going to happen is that Apple is going to have to roll out a system, a new system of rules. But I don't think it's as likely that the new world is going to be no rules, right? Like,
right,
it's going to be rules that have in them, embedded in them, the result of this ruling, assuming that it stands. So Apple will say, you still need to do in-app purchase. You need to use this API that we're, you know, for purchases. And then after that's confirmed, then you link out to your thing. And, you know, there's a question there of how much Apple will drag its feet. But having a judge look at them is going to change things, right? I would imagine that they have to actually please the judge, and the judge has to say, yes, that is an acceptable interpretation of my ruling.
What's other important things, as I, you know, sort of skim through this quickly, is to note that the way Epic got smacked down was in breach of contract, right? Which still says Apple gets to make a contract and gets to create rules. As you just said, it's not a lawless society. So rules, you know, mean that Apple does still have a large degree of control over its platform, which means, you know, you can't just shove your third party payment system, like you're saying. You can't just shove that in there and be like, well, this is how we're going to do it now. So I think this is both a big ruling in the sense that it does seem to correct some of the, I think, biggest frustration points with the App Store potentially. But it's also small in that it's narrowly targeted at one specific aspect of the system, though it has been broadly interpreted both to apply to things beyond games. So this doesn't apply to just games. It applies to pretty much anything that's an in-app purchase. And it applies, even though it is a violation of a California law, it applies nationwide. Mm-hmm. And presumably, if Apple decides to actually go forward this, I would guess they would make it a global thing because, you know, as we've seen elsewhere, they're getting more and more scrutiny and pressure from other countries as well, like they did in South Korea. So why not get ahead of the game there?
Well, the injunction takes effect in 90 days and, you know, again, pending any appeals, and would be administered by Judge Yvonne Gonzalez-Rogers. So I guess we'll see what Apple's response is. It would not surprise me. Mike and I were talking about this on Upgrade, that Apple's approach seems to be this kind of incremental approach, that they've decided that they would rather lose, minimize what they think is minimize their losses by taking everything one step at a time, rather than just coming out with a new reform thing and hoping that it does the trick. the gamble there is that you, when you take it one step at a time, you don't end up with more losses than if you did the other one. But I think their argument is there's no guarantee that if they did a big reform package, they wouldn't still be scrutinized for other things and end up in a worse position. But I look at this and I think, you know, this is actually kind of commensurate with that, in the sense that they, I would think, have been talking internally about what happens if this stuff, you know, if the Korean law gets passed, if this ruling happens, what do they need to do in order to create rules that follow the new set of guidelines that have put upon them? And I would think that if we're talking incremental, that they've had a discussion of, like, what does the App Store look like if we have to allow external links? What are our rules? What do we need to change to the APIs and all of those sorts of things? And that you know, the most likely scenario here is probably that whatever their contingency plans were, they will put those out there. And of course, they'll do a self-aggrandizing press release where they announce how they're doing this all for the good of the App Store universe, et cetera, right? Because that seems to be their game plan now.
That's how they roll.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting period of flux that we're in here. I think that we're definitely going to see some changes. It's just a question of magnitude going forward, is how big the effect will be to change the experience. But
and I want to ponder Epic for a second, because they lost this lawsuit. They have to pay Apple. They have to Apple has the right to keep them out of the App Store.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the thing that they most, well, maybe not most wanted to accomplish, but a thing they have said they wanted to accomplish, they seem to have accomplished.
Yeah, it's...
They may you know, never be able to benefit from it.
Pyrrhic victory, I think, in its purest form here.
Well, I mean, it gives Tim Sweeney the opportunity to seem like he's a he's an idealist, right? I guess, right? Like, we won the one thing that doesn't help us, but yay. Yeah.
He hasn't tweeted about this yet, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I mean, there'll be much more detail about this as it goes, but big news, days before Apple's biggest press event of the year.
Oh, boy. So. Yep. Yep. This is going to be an interesting couple weeks here.
Yeah. I also think this is what's funny about this, too, is that I look at this and think there's a real scenario here where, you know, the difference between using Apple Pay to buy something and using Apple's in-app purchase is going to be so, like, using Apple Pay is really easy. It's easier to buy things with Apple
Pay. Yeah, sure.
So, like, could Apple be competing with itself here? Via Stripe or something like that. It's like very, very weird and kind of funny.
Its rules about Apple Pay versus in-app purchase stuff has always felt a little odd because of the distinction. Like, you can only, you know, if it's a real world good or something, you can use Apple Pay. But for anything digital, you got to use in-app purchase. And it's like, well, I've always said, why not come up with a deal? It's like, hey, look, you want to take, here are your options. Take Apple Pay and roll your own payment server, and we won't take a percentage, or use our very convenient in-app purchase server, which means you don't have to do anything, and we'll take a percentage.
Yeah, I think that it's another example of Apple trying to scrape as much money as possible out of something, right? Like, maximize revenue as much as possible, ruthlessly. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again, it's a place where Apple's much vaunted focus on the user goes out the window because they can make a few more dollars. Because by controlling the in-app purchase process and not going through a credit card transaction, they're going through the Link credit card that they roll together and they handle the back end and however they've got their credit card processing there, versus going through a credit card transaction using their credit card, which is, it's a different thing, right? And I assume they make more money on every dollar from the linked account rather than Apple Pay. And that's why it is the way it is. Because if they made more money in Apple Pay, they'd just use Apple Pay.
Yep.
And Apple Pay's experience is better, I think.
I agree.
And so it's yet another example of Apple being like, yeah, you know, we could make this a little bit smoother, but we'd have to give up a little bit of cash. And our friend James said today, James Thompson, that that Apple reminds him of like a cat, like a feral cat that is now it's a rescue or a rescue cat, right? Grew up on the streets, doesn't understand that it's now living in a mansion. Or the way I always put it is, my dad grew up during the Great Depression, and he saved all sorts of broken stuff, and he used like wire coat hangers to fix things that somebody else mm-hmm. might just replace with something else. And he had that mindset of from the lean times for his entire life. And like Apple's near-death experience in the late 90s and early 2000s, Steve Jobs built a corporate culture that very much acts that way, like that every dollar counts and we will go out of business. And what you see is there was just a piece today about, oh, who was it by?
Roger McNamee.
McNamee, right. Yeah.
Venture capitalist.
And that was basically like, hey, Tim, you are making decisions about nickels and dimes that threaten your entire business. And why are you doing that? And it's totally true. I mean, it's hard. I think the story of the last 5 years with this stuff is Apple being penny wise and pound foolish and risking the big picture of their business because they want to scrape a little more cash out of it when they've got more cash than they know what to do with.
Yeah, there's a saying about how you're always fighting the last war, right? Yep. And I think that's exactly what's happening here is Apple is still fighting the war from the 90s, where it's like, we gotta stay alive, right? We're fighting a war for our survival. And the answer is, you're no longer in a situation where you have to worry about your survival. It would be almost, I mean, I'm not going to say Apple will never go out of business, but it will take either a long time or something incredibly catastrophic to happen for that to occur right now. So you don't need to worry about, where's my next meal coming from, right? Like, that's not an issue for you right now. Your next meal is caviar.
You need to, and changing corporate culture is super hard. I have talked about this a lot, that like I went to work for a print magazine and was tasked with making it online focused, and I would get buy-in from people who would immediately go back to their desk and then go back to their old ways, right? Like, it's super hard. The culture hovers over like every, because it's not just about people, it's about all the incentives. It's about like everything aligned in a corporation is aligned toward those things, and changing. It's very hard to change all of the things and realign all of the things. And at Apple, this is what I see as the problem is Apple can say, and like Phil Schiller, one of the most important people at Apple, said 10 years ago, we don't need to make this much money off the App Store. And is that like Tim Cook saying, no, I insist that we make this much money off the App Store? No, I'm sure Apple senior executives have had long conversations about how they need to balance revenue with long-term business model stability. The problem is that it sure seems that within Apple, there are all sorts of people and all sorts of incentives aligned to do what Steve Jobs wanted them to do from the beginning, which is take every dollar off the table. And that's number one. Instead of what's the best for the users, what's the best for our long-term business model. And like, I don't believe that the executives are totally defiant and they're like, no, we must just keep getting the money because that's the only thing that matters. I just think that they're not, like, the business isn't wired that way, and that's really hard to unwind. But a judge can help.
Yeah, sure. I think it's hard to discount the purely like muscle memory almost of it too.
Sure.
Right?
Well, that's part of it, right?
Momentum. This is the way we've done things. Why did we change? Yeah, nobody wants to change. It's hard to change all your routines and practices.
We're the most valuable company in the world. Why change? Why change
it's
anything?
Working great for us, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I always cart out that John Madden thing, but winning is a great deodorant is his line. Yeah. But there's the truth of that. Like, as long as it's going good, it's very hard to get anybody to reconsider anything they're doing.
Well, short-term tangible gains are always more tempting than long-term benefits, right? Because they're here, they're now, right? It's the same reason our society is very bad at things like capital investment, where it's like we have bridges that fall apart, right? Because nobody wants to sit around maintaining bridges. They want stuff that has a result right now.
Yeah.
And I think that's a fundamental issue with, you know, corporate capitalist or, you know, capitalist corporations is like, we could have this money now, or we could have some intangible benefit 10 years in the future that we can't really measure because, you know, how do we know what's going to happen 10 years in the future? And the answer is, yeah, but, you know, you invest in stuff now, it potentially reaps you huger benefits in the future. But, yeah, it's just harder to quantify, right? Like, yeah. So people go for the short-term gain. And I think that is a disservice in a lot of cases, especially with a company like Apple, which, again, has the ability to measure its lifespan in, you know, multiples of decades, yeah. Right? Like, you can afford to sit there and think of the future, but
you really
I wonder if I really want the Apple executives to watch this foundation series they're doing and maybe think about that. There's an interesting, a collapse of a giant empire spanning. Let's think about this. I think that's going to go.
What are you most interested in for next Tuesday?
You know, it's a weird year because I do feel like there's, I'm not really sure. Like, I wrote up my piece for Macworld this week was, they asked me to do a what to expect since my column usually comes out on Monday and the events are on Tuesday. And I sort of was running through the rumors and like, you know, there's not a lot right now. We've heard, I mean, iPhone 13 is a lock, right? The bigger Apple has gotten, and this is sort of the premise of the intro of my column next week, the bigger Apple has gotten, the easier it is to sort of predict what the company's going to do, both in the general and in the specific. So it's like turning a battleship, right? You're going to make some waves. You can look at it and say, look, every fall there's a new iPhone. We know this. It would be very rare for them to deviate from it at this point. It could, but, you know, we have the evidence to show this is going to happen. So with every fall, a new iPhone, and a fact that the bigger you get, the more sort of, you know, ideas and leaks there are of things coming out, it's harder and harder to keep stuff secret. And combined with that, the fact that the platform and the devices have evolved so much. I look at an iPhone 13, I'm like, well, I will probably get one. I'm on the iPhone upgrade plan. I'm sure there will be something in the mix that'll be like, oh, that's pretty cool. But other than the sort of year-over-year processor and camera improvements, which are nice, it's hard for me to point to a feature and be like, ah, this is a thing that my current phone lacks that I'm really excited about getting. So I'm curious to see how they're going to play this because I do feel like it gets harder and harder every year to sort of make that argument of like, you got, especially for people on the upgrade program. I love the convenience of it, but like, it's harder to say, like, why do you need a new phone every year? Like, what is your new phone doing that it wasn't doing last year? So I want to see how they play that. I think the watch has a similar issue, although it's impressive to me the watch has come so far in such a small amount of time. But the speculation about that is really like, well, no new health sensors, possibly a redesign, a slightly larger screen, that kind of stuff. I'm on a 4 and like there's certain aspects of like, oh, you know, I don't have an always on display yet. That would be nice, but I need a little more to tip me over the edge to buying a new watch when my current watch is like, no, it's pretty good, you know? So I don't think of those two things. I'm not super excited. I would like a new iPad at some point, but I'm not sure still what model I want. Mm-hmm. What about you? Is there anything that, like, I know you it's harder to look at it from a buying perspective when we cover this stuff.
Yeah, I know.
But like, is there anything that's like exciting or interesting?
Well, I you know, the mini, the whatever 13 mini, I will probably buy that because I really like the iPhone mini, and this may
maybe
be the last one.
Yeah.
Or the last one until it turns into like an SE, and it's going to be a few years, and I that bums me out that's the case. But I really like the smaller phone. I think it's great. I'm actually in the market for an Apple Watch. I am using a 2-year-old Apple Watch now, and so getting the brighter always on and whatever else new that they've got in that new look, I'm interested in that too. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I'm looking for just in terms of personal purchase sort of thing. And then like the rumor about like an iPad mini has never really worked for me, but, or, you know, I've tried it a bunch of times. Well, that's not true. I was a huge fan of the original iPad mini, and then the iPad Pro came out and I was like, oh, I'm just going to go to the other side. Like, it was so full of features, but the iPad mini, that's more in the design style of the iPad Pros with flat sides and maybe like an iPad, a small iPad Air essentially. Right. Pencil 2 support. It's probably not for me, but I would love to see that product because I feel like the iPad mini has an important kind of place in the grand scheme of iPad things. And I like to see that whole product lineup just kind of keep turning over to
Mini
be...
Two. I think I had a Mini Two, and it was. I agree with you. It was a fantastic device at the time.
Yeah, I loved that, and I had the first Retina Mini, and I thought that was amazing. And then the iPad. Seriously, the iPad Pro came out 12.9, and I went from tiny iPad to enormous iPad, and I am now still using the enormous iPad. I don't think I'm going to go back to the iPad Mini, but I'm looking forward to that too. But you're right, it's all incremental. So I guess, you know, what's most interesting as an observer of this is going to be like what I'm looking forward to covering is some of the details of like how, you know, in the end, what matters the most. I meant to write this, and maybe I'll write this in Six Colors before the event. But like my hot take is that the most important thing that happens, if I'd written a Macworld column this week, which I skipped this week, it would have been this, which is it's actually the next chip is the most important thing.
Right.
Details sure. on what the next A-series chip is, because that is the core of what will power, you know, Macs in the future and iPads in the future. Like they increment that chip every year, and then they use it as the basis for all the other chips that they make and all the other devices they put it in. So, you know, you could argue that just focusing on that. Plus, I am fascinated by how Apple in the Tim Cook era handles its pricing. Like there was a rumor today that they're not going to offer the highest storage configuration on the non-Pro phones. Like you won't be able to do 512. You'll only be able to do 64. And or what is it, 256, and you'll only be able to do 64 and 128. I forget what it is exactly, but it's like there are three configs and they're only going to offer the bottom two, which it's like, okay, interesting. Why? And what does that say about pricing? Like, I'm fascinated by the decisions they make there that are in the fine print about like what models get what. And what their prices, are they going to continue to ratchet up the pricing, or are they going to keep the base prices the same and then ratchet up other things like for upgrade? You know, as a person who covers this and covers the business of Apple to an extent, I'm going to be watching that. And then, like I said, on the tech side, I think it's the chip, just because how are they going to describe it? Are they going to take us down into that room that doesn't actually exist underground, but they like to pretend that it does, where it's the secret chip lab? Secret chip lab, probably across the street, but, you know, it's okay.
Yeah, the chip thing is interesting because we've all been waiting for the new app, you know, the new Macs to roll out with presumably some sort of successor, and I would guess... I don't know. Is the
I think they're based on
whatever?
I think they're based
on the A15.
Yeah, on the old chip. Yeah.
Oh, the A4, the 14. You think the M1X is so it's like a souped up A14 or M1, basically.
At least if the rumors are true, they expected that chip to be out with those laptops this summer, and then it got delayed. Right. So they're probably the multi-core version of the M1, the more core, you know, doubled core version of the M1, which means that they're based on the A14, not the A15, which is going to be interesting too, right? So then we get we're in the A15 era, but they're still putting out A14-based chips, and then next year we'll see the A15-based M2, I would imagine, is my guess anyway. But who knows? And what are the details, right? Like, Apple's consistent until they're not. And what's interesting is when they're not, right? Like, so we can assume everything about what they're going to announce on Tuesday. What's going to be interesting is all the things that we didn't assume because they didn't follow pattern. It's like, oh, that's a surprise. And what are those surprises?
And there's always something. I think that's a great point. Like, you know, there's always something that they don't expect or something that doesn't leak or whatever, right? You know, very rare is the year where we know absolutely everything. It happens. We get like close sometimes. There have been years where it's like 90% of stuff feels like, okay, we were talking about that. But there's usually something in there because you can keep secrets when it comes to things like software or things like services, I think, even. I mean, I'm curious to see what they do on the services front. After all, they like had a California streaming tagline on this, right? And you wonder like, all right, is there an Apple TV related announcement happening? You know, is there an additional service that will get integrated in the Apple One bundle? I have no idea. Like, it's easier to keep some of that stuff under wraps. So I'm intrigued. I'm also curious to know how many events we're going to see this fall. Last year we had three, which was bananas. This most years in the past, I feel like two is not unusual.
Two is not unusual, right? Especially that the Mac, which is not really part of the iPhone messaging, comes a little bit later. And it seems like those laptops are almost ready to go. And so that we're probably going to get them next month. My guess is they'll do two, not necessarily because this was their strategy all along, but almost like it got delayed into being two fall events. But three events in the fall is hard on everyone. It's hard on Apple and all of their planning. It's hard on all of us to cover all of it. It's a lot of work. But also, I think it's taxing people's attention in a way that maybe Apple would prefer not to. Sure. The Rolling Thunder thing is fun on one level, but on another level, like, the thing to remember is if you can announce it at the iPhone event, you should, because the iPhone event is the one that the most people in the world pay attention to. So if they can wrap everything that they've got ready to go into that and then leave the Macs for October, let's do that.
Like, as we said, Monterey probably coming later in the fall, so it makes more sense that they...
Yeah, feels very much like macOS Monterey got put on the shelf while they, like, literally betas stopped. And then the iOS betas picked up, and it's very much like, okay, hold Mac while we finalize iOS, and they did that, and now they're going to go back to the Mac and finalize macOS, which, by the way, macOS Monterey, really not in great shape, parts of it, and other parts of it are fine, but it's weird, and yes, October is fine, like, don't ship it, it's not ready yet, but they seem to know that, and they're going to get back to it, so yeah, I think two. If I had to guess, I think it's going to be two and not
there's
three.
There's some wild cards in there, right? Like, in terms of where stuff shows up, because it does seem like there's a ninth generation iPad. It does seem like that iPad mini. It seems like there's some AirPod, stuff. Like, you can kind of go either way, depending on where you're ready to go and where you have space to do it. So
exactly.
I think there's a lot of possibility. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the only thing that I feel is certain is that the iPhone will happen now, and that the Mac will happen probably next month. Beyond that,
there was even that discussion about the watch being potentially like delayed, and then this morning I think there was a thing like they've worked it out.
Ming-Chi Kuo was like, it's fine, it'll ship in September. I'm like, all right, Ming-Chi Kuo, you got it. Like,
it makes sense, because the watch depends on the phone, so you want to link them if you can. Last year I think they, because of those delays in the supply chain and stuff, they ended up releasing it was the watch first, and then the
watch first.
Later.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Yeah, which was weird, but you got to do what the supply chain lets you do sometimes, because that's it's things out of your control.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week to break it all down, right? We're going to break it all down.
There's going to be a lot to break down.
There will be. But I got to go draft things.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Thanks to everybody out there for listening to Six Colors, a podcast that normally releases on Fridays, as opposed to Upgrade, which does not. But we're doing a bonus episode, so we just stole Upgrade's thunder with this great conversation about breaking news. All right. We'll be back next week with much, 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 much more. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.